Doherty Phoenix, and this is my podcast where I talk about life, literature, and what brings them together to light up our lives in a moving, impactful, and long-lasting way. Now, let's get lit. Arary. Let's get lit, Arary.
We live in a time of sensory overload. Gather a group of a billion users to face the incessant tweet of an instant moment of gratification. Am I right? We are encouraged to have it all and to have it all now. And this has driven us to work harder. But sometimes to crash faster too, right? So today's topic is bibliotherapy. What is bibliotherapy? And why does it work? Does it work? How does it work? Bibliotherapy is a process of using literature to heal, both emotionally and psychologically. Now, the third edition of Webster's New International Dictionary defines bibliotherapy as the use of selected reading materials as therapeutic adjuvants in medicine and psychiatry. Fancy. Russell and Schrodes, 1950, are cited as also defining bibliotherapy, and I quite like their definition a little better. Here it is. They say that bibliotherapy is a process of dynamic interaction between the personality of the reader and the literature interaction, which may be utilized for personality assessment, adjustment, and growth. Now, some may even go on to argue that literature holds the power to heal in an even bigger and less individualistic way, like socially. An argument I myself can certainly get behind, and there can be no doubt that literature has a way of having a huge and lasting impact on human lives and decision making. Some very quick notable mentions are texts such as Mein Kampf by Hitler and the Holy Bible. There exists numerous texts that have and continue to shape civilization. In fact, in that book I mentioned earlier, Bibliotherapy, The Right Book at the Right Time, it was published in 1980, by the way, the authors Cornett and Cornett note that historically, from as far back as the ancient libraries of Greece, there were aisles dedicated to the literature for the express purpose of deep healing. The authors point out that an epigraph on the library founded in Alexandria about 300 BC read Medicine for the Mind. The library in Thebes in ancient Greece was dedicated to the healing of the soul. The medieval abbey library of St. Gallen in Switzerland carries the inscription Medicine Chest for the Soul. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The notion of healing through words ain't new. So now I think we're adequately acquainted with bibliotherapy in terms of definition. We know what it is. Let's talk about how it works. Bibliotherapy has the propensity to be a successful form of healing because it can propel us into metacognition, which is to say, it forces us to embrace the amazing ability to think about our thoughts, to analyze them, separate from them, when we see them put on display by fictional characters. Can you believe that? That the human brain is so beautifully complex that it has the ability to think about what it is thinking while it is thinking it.
Very meta indeed.
So when we are faced with a fictional or sometimes even non-fictional character going through struggle, whatever that struggle may be, loss, heartbreak, insecurity, identity, abuse, the awe of travel and new experiences, pain, joy, touch, fear, orgasm. Yes, I said that.
There is a reason those books are so popular. You know the ones. Don't be coy with me.
A secret desire to obey the id or to relinquish control, whatever the human conflict, however, by placing it before us through the endless representation of words, humanity finds him or herself face to face with the possible problem or its possible solution, or at the very least, closer. Literature allows us a safe and distant platform upon which we can become intellectually and emotionally invested in a problem.
Okay, so let's tackle
a big question here. How can you use bibliotherapy? Now, in an ideal setting, for ultimate success and catharsis, bibliotherapy causes the reader to be reactive, or more recently, interactive with literature by producing a tangible response that isn't just in your head, right? Something in hand that you can study, like a journal entry or a summary. Ideally, there is a how did that make you feel or a how can you relate to that kind of classic red couch therapeutic clinical language that shuttles us into orderly reflection. Of course, in a classroom setting, we can see this in a more developmental way. Helping students to get through a problem before they are ready to tell you about that problem in a way that connects that problem to themselves through the mirror of literature. It's that let talk teach school of thought, that emphasis on discussion that proves so handy with students. Do not dictate, guide. There is a clear difference. How a student feels and reacts to a story may not be how you do, but that's kind of the whole point, isn't it? Guide them to understanding the world is full of different perspectives and reactions to problems, and that a vast majority of these responses we get to try on for size, so to speak, through reading various literature. Ideally, one would identify appropriate lit that makes the reader realize they are not the only one facing the problem, presented in a non-judgmental way that urges the reader to have their own encounter with the content, and follow up, because reflection is the key to catharsis after the immediate shock of recognition. Now, we've all heard the old adage, the first step to recovery is admitting there is a problem, right? So literature provides us the opportunity to, without shame, admit or discover the problem to the most important player, ourselves, sometimes completely by accident. After all, how many times have you felt isolated in your feelings? As though you are the only one who feels a particular way about a thing. You must be. No one else seems bothered by it. This feeling must be brand new and strange. Who would understand such different and maybe even vile thought? You alone, or so the mind convinces us. Because, except, maybe not really? And that's easy to say, but hard to believe, isn't it? Somehow, seeing this feeling play out in a story seems more convincing. This character cannot judge you. This character allows catharsis. This character introduces new possibilities for how to move forward with this feeling, this thought. This character suggests a reaction to this feeling or thought we can now consider, analyze, fictionally try on and check the fit off, then discard if it's not the one for us. Suddenly it's OMG and I never thought someone could even think that way, much less feel it, much less put it to words. Suddenly it's, I wonder if that would work. Or, nah, that would definitely not work for me. But, cue internal problem solving kickstart. Boom. Literature. Mind blown. Importance of reading. Fix the libraries already. You get it. No, but I mean, all joke aside, you get it, right? Suddenly the notion of someone having defeated the monster in the past makes defeating the monster seem possible, real, a real solution grown from the seed of a fictional scenario. Words for feelings previously existing in dark, shadowy places so that you could not name them? Shock of recognition, ladies and gentlemen. Now, this great book, and surprisingly short too, I kind of mentioned it in passing before, I really enjoyed reading it, Bibliotherapy, the right book at the right time. Don't worry, I'll hook you up with a link or something so you can check it out yourself. But in this book, James Baldwin, an American novelist, is quoted as having said, "You think your pain and your heartache are unprecedented in the history of the world. But then you read. It was books that taught me that the things that tormented me most were the very things that connected me with all the people who were alive or had ever been alive. End of quote.
Yeah, he said that. Not my words. His. Let that sink in.
See how you feel about it. I'm going to take a moment to mention the importance of representation here, because of course different books will speak to different people in different settings, bodies, and scenarios, and this will make for the ultimate effectiveness of bibliotherapy. Now, when we began, we spoke about how the state of our modern world has made us incredibly sensory dependent. Let us look at that again, held up against the lens of bibliotherapy. It is not fast. It is paced, planned, intentional. Word-by-word discovery and self-analysis, whether immediately conscious or subconscious. But does it work? Well, you tell me. Remember briefly, if you can, the first time you saw yourself in a story, a poem, a play, a song. Suddenly, there's a sense of self-awareness, self-analysis, critical thinking, crisis management skills are being developed. Conflict is being spotted and resolved through reading. And hey, problems exist, of course, within the use of bibliotherapy too, let us not pretend. And we're going to touch on at least two of them now. One, the fear of a problem being bigger than you originally thought it was. Yes, certainly. Imagine a person privately struggling with schizophrenic tendencies. Learning about schizophrenia from reading about a young man also struggling with it, and then finding out that things can progress so bad that you could have delusions so real that you think your home is on fire and you jump out of a window to save your own life from a fire that isn't even there. Yeah. I might put the book down too. I might become even more sure that I am perfectly fine and that there is nothing wrong with me. This is not happening to me, and be willing to die on that hill because holy crap, whoa, and I was not ready. Two. The case of incorrect information. Literature successful in being bibliotherapeutic must present authentic information about whatever crisis is being discussed. I cannot underscore enough the importance of research here, and this can be the difference in promoting positive sexual health and relationships and perpetuating rape culture. It can be the difference between getting angrier at the world that a rich blonde white girl from the burbs gets adopted and awarded a full scholarship to a higher education after her alcoholic dad kills both her parents in a car crash because, my parents are dead and where the heck is my scholarship because I am a young black man in the Caribbean and she didn't need no scholarship because, she is a rich white girl. Duh. Screw the world. Crash and burn. Therapy failure. Oops. Hypothetical, of course. My parents are very much alive, and I am indeed not a young black man in the Caribbean. But I'm just going to be frank here and say that unguided bibliotherapy, like any therapy not conducted in a clinical setting, heck, even therapy done in a clinical setting, could be unsuccessful. And I'm going to draw from The Right Book at the Right Time again here when the authors say, bibliotherapy is not foolproof. nor is it a panacea. It is a worthy adjunct to other methods of helping people cope with needs that arise in life. And while the authors mention that the chance encounter with the right book can become a type of therapy that assists the reader in solving problems or accepting difficult situations, they also preface that with, good literature is built on life itself and life's not always easy. So yes, a good book could help and heal you, and it can scare you. This is a reality of life. Let us look at some practical examples, and we will begin first with the Goliath of a boogeyman of contemporary times, depression, anxiety, mental health. Do we dare to zero in on how this is dealt with or judged or viewed within the Black community? Within the Caribbean? I don't know. Do we have the whole episode for that weighty topic? Probably not, but make sure you leave a comment if you want to talk more about that. Leave a comment about it and we will definitely make room to discuss it in more specific detail. I want to mention that I will as well leave links to some of the resources I consulted on the topic if you want to continue to learn more about bibliotherapy in a scholarly light. Now, however, I'm going to talk books and characters with you. Okay, so we're going to do a little free talking about some books, right? First, I want to start with Fangirl by Rainbow Rowell. In this book, we are introduced to a main character who is struggling with severe social anxiety. She is a young adult. She's just going off to college, and she's really awkward with dealing with people. This she has remedied with a lot of writing. She's really big in the fan fiction world. Very, very big, though people don't know her identity. But she's so socially anxious. She's so afraid of that interaction with other people that instead of asking where the cafeteria is, she hoards a ton of protein bars under her bed and she eats them. She survives on them for as long as she can. She doesn't really talk to her roommate. She's pretty sure that her roommate hates her. And she isn't propelled out of that safe space until somebody eats every one of her protein bars. And she must now venture out into the world to find food, to ask a question. You can imagine the panic, right? And if you can't, lucky you. But I think a lot of us can imagine that panic of that first day of school, away from everything that is or has been comfortable for so long, and you don't want to look stupid. You don't want to be that one person who doesn't know, even though you're probably not going to be that one person that doesn't know. There are probably going to be other people, but your brain doesn't tell you that. So Fangirl is a great book suggestion, I think, for anyone who has struggled with being really shy, social awkwardness, and kind of wants to see how the main character in this book deals with that. How does she deal with being a book nerd and a common reserved person with little to no friends, who doesn't really know how to make friends in her adult life? How does she move that from that to thriving college student? I'm not going to spoil the book for you. And hey, maybe you can't relate to that first day of school's jitters thing, in which case, good for you. You know, so many of us can. But let's look at it in a different light. Maybe it's your first day on a new job, or it's your first time at a different location. You don't know where the bathroom is. You don't know who to get stationery from. You don't know what the procedure is. And you don't want to be the one person who looks stupid or who doesn't know. And you probably wouldn't be. But again, your brain isn't going to tell you that part. Living in a society that asks so much of us, that is so expectant of us, it can be difficult sometimes. Fangirl is a great book that brings this to the forefront. The main character is just another person trying to figure out this whole adulting thing without a manual, and is a bit anxious about it. Next book I want to consider is Forthright by Cindy McKenzie. Young black girl in the Caribbean, living in a post-revolutionary world, or rather on a post-revolutionary island. She's got lots of questions, and the people charged with being responsible to answer those questions are nowhere to be found. Who does she turn to for answers about how to deal with periods and what to do when boys and men start approaching her in a way that she both likes and does not like? What then? There's no one around to ask those questions, to pose those questions to. She must look now within herself. The weight of the world comes down on her shoulders, and she must find the answers within self. How does she deal with that? Surely, some of us can relate to feeling like the people who are strategically placed in our lives to help us are not there when we most need them. In moments of trauma, in moments of confusion. Again, I'm not gonna ruin the book for you, so you're gonna have to go ahead and read it yourself to find out how the character deals with it. Another book, The Rest of Us Just Live Here. One of my favorite books, actually, and this one dips into some magical realism. The setting is in a town of heroes and everybody else. Because we don't all get to be heroes, right? And who hasn't felt like that? Who hasn't felt like you needed a hero in your life rather than that you were the hero of your own life? The characters have their own problems, their own struggles. What happens when you cannot fly and the baby is falling out of the burning building? What do you do then? Now, as I'm sure you know, I could go on about books for quite a long time. And if you'd like a comprehensive list of books that talk about mental illnesses in various shapes and forms, I would totally be up for providing that on my blog at sandalsandsunnies.blogspot.com. But we have come to the end of today's episode. And trust me, there are a lot of books out there. I mean, there's The Kiss Quotient. There's Turtles All the Way Down. There's Holding Up the Universe. There's Big Island Small. There's a vast majority of books that we could discuss. But how long would we be here, right? So let's wrap it up, and let's wrap it up tight. So this last quote I'm going to leave with you because I think it really summarizes my thoughts on the topic. And again, this comes from Bibliotherapy, the right book at the right time. And they are quoting Schrodes, 1955. The boundaries of bibliotherapy are yet to be firmly drawn. But at least it is likely to arouse an interest in books and help to find meaning in them. In some cases, there may be delayed reaction. A book that at the time of reading merely entertained him may become a part of his mind's store of images, a segment of his experienced world, a touchstone for his evaluation of experience, a solitary reminder of danger, a clue to undemanding his motives, a clarification of reality, a strategy for coping, or a vision of order. To these ends, the imaginative writer contributes, for he is able to teach the human heart through its sympathies and empathies a knowledge of itself. Thank you for listening and spending time with me today. If you want to show your support or tell me your thoughts on today's topic, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at The Wordy Phoenix, and maybe even be featured in the next episode. For even more of my thoughts, check out my blog at sandalsandsunnies@blogspot.com. Thank you and goodbye, and remember to stay literary, book nerds. Peace.
love book.